This is the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Steve Vaughn also today, and we're coming back to economics largely because I'm focused right now on creating an economics course that is understandable and presentable for 14, 15-year-olds, but for the rest of us as well, because most of us are not economic gurus and geniuses where we understand all of the weird obfuscations that go on with our modern economies. At one point, it was just, you know, you sell your cow and you buy 24 chickens with it. You know, that kind of thing. But I'm sorry, but economies have become a lot more complicated these days, largely because they have become so corrupt. The complication just simply involves a ton of corruption and profligacy amongst the leaders in the economy. Now, the three wealthiest men in America, their marriages have fallen apart in the last year. Technically, the second wealthiest man in America, Elon Musk, broke up with his live-in girlfriend, according to a recent news report. But Jeff Bezos, who has been the wealthiest man in America for the last year and a half, or 2 or 3 years, Jeff Bezos was divorced in 2019. And the third wealthiest man in America, Bill Gates, his divorce was finalized just last month. So, friends, this seems to indicate something's happening to the entire American socioeconomic system. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg as to what's going on below the surface of the entire American social strata. We are finding a dissolution of socioeconomic systems around the world. I think this indicates the world economy is collapsing. I do. I think it's just an indication of the collapse of a world economy. And so we're going to get into that a little bit. By the way, this just in, the richest man in America is no longer Jeff Bezos. It's Elon Musk.
Wow.
Believe it or not, Elon Musk is now the richest man on the planet, Steve.
When did that happen?
Last week.
Okay. So
yeah, just last week.
Yeah, it keeps changing hands. So what's he worth now?
He's worth more than $200 billion. But now we're going to take a quick look at this, and we've referred to this several times already, and I come back to this because Elon Musk is supposed to be one of the coolest and most wonderful men in the world. In the minds of so much of the millennial generation, he so represents the millennial generation, and yet it seems to me that he represents the destruction, the corruption, the breaking down of an entire millennial generation. So that's why Elon Musk is so important for our presentation today, is because Elon Musk represents so much of the entire modern generation. He represents that which is destroying our society. Now, Elon Musk is worth more than $200 billion, but his principal asset, Tesla, has never made a dime producing and selling electric cars. Now, here's the question I want to look at today. How does the most despicable, most unprincipled, most corrupt of the richest men in the world become so rich? His company doesn't make money. They steal money. Tesla and Musk are robbers, thieves, and corrupt to the core, and I think we need to keep that in mind. Tesla received $1.6 billion in regulatory credits last year, and that far outweighs its net income of $721 million, meaning that Tesla actually lost $879 million making and selling cars. In other words, they lost $1,800 per vehicle sold last year. And you say, well, what are these regulatory credits? Well, the regulatory credits are money taken from GM and Ford, these other car companies, who are being saddled with these credits or these regulatory credits on the part of the U.S. federal government, and then that money is just handed over to Tesla. This is Robin Hood. This is worse than Robin Hood. This is, you know, robbing the rich to pay the rich, I guess.
Yeah.
this is a gun to the head of GM and Ford, and then the money is taken and the money is turned over to Tesla. Now, it has to do with the whole environmental thing, because Tesla is supposed to be more environmentally friendly than GM and Ford, despite the fact that it takes far more carbon credits to make Tesla's batteries and to run the Tesla cars and such. Because don't forget, you're still burning coal to produce the electricity to provide for these cars. Well, you know, bottom line is it's not doing anything for environment. It's just simply a gun to the head of GM and Ford to provide for money for a losing company called Tesla.
Yeah, because, I mean, it all looks good, you know, it's because Tesla's not there filling up at a gas station. But one of the problems they're finding even in China with their electric cars is that the batteries are so expensive to replace. They have these huge electric car graveyards that I think we're going to end up seeing because of all of these, you know, when Tesla starts to, the batteries run out because it's so expensive to replace and all that with the batteries, they're just going to scrap them, but they're not biodegradable. So we're going to end up with Tesla graveyards, just as they do in China with their electric car graveyards. So much for environmental friendliness.
Well, only thing that's keeping Tesla alive are these regulatory credits. This is government handouts that come directly from Ford and GM and the other automakers that are being saddled by these regulatory credits. And then this money is turned over to Tesla. And Tesla has lost $5.85 billion over the last 5 years, so it's not making money. Tesla is being capitalized at 785 times its free cash flow. So here's the deal. Musk is stealing money from car companies who have to pay regulatory credits for not making electric cars. It's redistribution of the wealth using the power of government to do it. But people are still crazy for Tesla stock. It's got a price-to-earnings ratio of 1,200. It's the biggest ripoff on the market.
Wow.
General Motors' price-to-earnings is 6.3. Tesla stock is the biggest ripoff on the planet, but the lemmings are all running over the cliff. This is the most demonstrative insanity in the U.S. stock market today. Per car sold, Tesla is capitalized at $1,400,000. So in other words, if you add up all the value of the stock that is being handed over to Tesla, every car sold this year is being capitalized at $1,400,000.
That's just nuts.
GM is capitalized at $8,000 per car, and Toyota is capitalized at $20,000 per car. That makes Tesla a 200-fold ripoff. It's overvalued by 200 times. Does that tell you something of the insanity of the stock market, Steve?
Oh, man. Yeah. And so what you're saying then, Kevin, I think, is don't invest in Tesla.
I think that's pretty obvious. Yeah. I think that's pretty obvious. And yet young people are enamored by Elon Musk.
Yeah.
They are impressed by his swaggering, postmodern, big money ways. He's the new cool. But friends, he's not cool. He is not cool. Isaiah 5 applies here. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe to men mighty at drinking wine. Woe to men valiant for mixing intoxicating drink, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous man. Therefore, as the fire devours the stubble and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root will be as rottenness and their blossom will ascend like dust, because they have rejected the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Personally, I don't think this the whole Elon Musk phenomenon is going to last more than another 2-3 months, 2 years at the max. And this whole thing will be over. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations broadcast, friends.
Have you ever felt completely overwhelmed by the normal tasks of daily life? Parenting, academics, work, homemaking, personal care, discipleship, church, family. How does one do it all and stay sane at the same time? Well, we've got good news for you. You don't need to spin your wheels trying to find tips and tricks to get you through the day. Instead, join us this October 11th through 16th for the Homeschool Fitting It All In Summit 2.0 to learn how to decide what really matters, define a workable plan, and then direct your path toward the eternal. We have a world-class lineup of over 25 speakers, including Dr. John MacArthur, Stephen Kendrick, Ken Ham, Kevin Swanson, the Benham Brothers, and so many more. So join us this October in discovering biblical principles to help cut past the clutter and create a personalized action plan built on a God-centered foundation. You can register for free today. Just go to homeschoolsummits.com/event. That's homeschoolsummits.com/event.
Welcome back, my friends, to the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you all, to Steve Vaughn. And today we like to come and give you something of a demonstrative representation of what is going on at the heart of the nation. And this Tesla Elon Musk phenomenon is a beautiful example of what is going on in America today. David Stockman on Tesla, this is what he says. Tesla is not merely a colossal scam, and Elon Musk is not just a snake oil salesman par excellence. No, Tesla is the poster boy for a stock market that has lost its marbles completely owing to the unrelenting flood of fiat liquidity still being pumped by clueless central banks. Stockman has a way of summarizing things.
That doesn't sound nice.
Well, somebody's got to describe the insanity of the day.
Yeah.
And I think it's helpful to know where we are as a socioeconomic system so that we can hide ourselves in the day of catastrophe, in the day of disaster, as the Proverbs inform us. It is important for us to know the craziness, the insanity of what is going on with an entire stock market that is run by drunken sailors. The extreme valuation of stock is in large part due to stock buyback programs in which companies buy their own stock to inflate the value of the stock. This is usually associated with more big corporate debt. Now, Wall Street records the six companies most guilty for this artificial inflation of stock values: Apple, Google, Facebook, Oracle, Microsoft, JP Morgan. Companies participated in stock buyback at a record level of $85 billion in the second quarter of this year. Between 2014 and 2018, companies averaged about $20 billion per quarter in stock buybacks. Meanwhile, corporate debt has ballooned from $7 trillion to $11 trillion. Friends, about $5 to $6 trillion have been poured into stock buybacks. And this, again, is something of a unprincipled way in which to balloon a stock value. And then that's how you get to where we are today. Now, I've, again, tried to make this understandable for 14-year-old kids in my ninth grade economics book. Let me just read a portion of this, Steve. The huge increases of money released into the economy and the expansion of debt is a sneaky way to cheat and to steal. So this is what we're talking about. It's not just the corporate systems that are doing this, but also the Federal Reserve and the U.S. federal government releasing, what, $3, $4, $5 trillion into the economy in free money over the last year and a half. The huge increases is just one more way to cheat and to steal. The wealthiest billionaires profit the most from it. In 1980, the wealthiest 400 families in the United States held 2% of the nation's wealth. Okay, all the way back to 1980, the wealthiest 400 families in the United States held 2% of the nation's wealth. These families increased their share of that wealth to 8% in 2008 and then up to 18% in 2021. Was that 10 times what it was in 1980? Most of the wealth, that is about 20% of the nation's wealth, sits with 400 people. Okay, there's, what, almost 400 million people in America.
Yeah.
But the 400 wealthiest people in America own almost 20% of the wealth, up from 2% in 1980. Most of the wealth came by government funneling money into the economy, which increased the value of stocks. For example, Elon Musk increased his wealth from $25 billion to $200 billion in 2020. This huge increase in wealth comes by several means. First, certain big companies receive government bailouts and special rebates. And we just talked about a special rebate. Money just handed out to these companies. Also, the Federal Reserve is in cahoots with the federal government, putting stocks, money into stocks, which increases the value of these companies. So believe it or not, the federal government increases or invests in stocks. And that itself is another means by which the stock market prices go up. As the government-controlled banks hand out debt money, the large corporations jumped into the mix. Instead of putting the money into tools and research and development, the companies bought back their own stock. When their stocks would drop in the market, the companies would artificially prop up the value of the stock by buying their own stock. As they invested in their own stock using easy debt money, the stock would rise. This would invite more investors to jump back into the market. Corporate debt ballooned from $4 trillion to $11 trillion between 2007 and 2020, while the companies put $5.6 trillion into buying back their own stock. This inflated the stock market, making the companies look like they were worth more than they really were. That's how the owners of these companies like Elon Musk increase their wealth, and the rich get richer, and the poor get poorer, and this is how the whole system becomes a den of thieves and a conspiracy of robbers. The people hurt the most in the process are those who are saving their money in the banks. These are the widows, you know, the people who have saved up their money to just try to live out their years, the value of their savings will decrease because the interest they get from the bank doesn't keep up with inflation. So is that something that's understandable, Steve? I tried to present it in the most understandable way possible for, say, a ninth grade level.
Yeah. So essentially what I'm hearing is that the value of stocks is based upon its popularity and whether people want to buy them or not. If stocks prices are going up, people will have a tendency to buy because they think the business is getting better, so they want to invest in the business. So if stocks go down and businesses buy their own stocks, makes it look like it's a good thing to buy into. And so the stocks are going up, people want to invest in that company because that company is doing well, but the company really isn't doing well. Sounds kind of like a Ponzi scheme to me, and what hit Enron and some of these other places back in the 90s or 2000s. It's just crazy. It's dishonest.
Here's one way to put it. Let's say you were in the flower business in a particular city. And so, you know, you have all these flower businesses. You own like six or eight stores. And then you just decide to run around through all the stores and buy up all the flowers. You know, just buying up the flowers. You go in, spend your money, you know, debt money that you get from the government, and that increases the price of those flowers for the rest of the market.
Right.
But you artificially increase the price of the flower.
Right, right, because it's supply and demand.
You did it artificially. You did it by reducing the supply.
Right.
And by pretending like there was something of a market or a demand for that particular, you know, those flowers or for a particular stock. And so it was just a lie. It was just, you were pretending like there was a demand, there was an interest in these flowers or that stock, but you did it by just buying back the flowers, or in this case, buying back the stocks.
Yeah. So an artificial scarcity and an artificial demand to try to then increase the price. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know that the piper will invoice. In the end, you know, eventually these ballooning prices will pop, and then you get the crash. And eventually an honest system will present itself, but only after a devastating crash to an entire economy. Well, there are a few verses that apply to America at the end of a civilization, friends, and I draw from Isaiah 1:23. Your princes are rebels and companions of thieves. Everyone loves a bribe and runs after gifts. They do not bring justice to the fatherless, and the widow's cause does not come to them. Boy, that describes the American economy. That describes Elon Musk. That describes the forced rebates, the corporate handouts, the debt systems, the buybacks of stock. That describes your princes, your rebels, companions of thieves. Everyone loves a bribe, runs after gifts. They do not bring justice to the fatherless. Isaiah 3:12, my people, infants are their oppressors. Women rule over them. Oh, my people, your guides mislead you. They have swallowed up the course of your paths. Psalm 55:23, but you, O God, will cast them down into the pit of destruction. Men of blood and treachery shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in you. Now, some people say, well, the rich have always been this way. And of course, we want to caution people not to envy the rich. Do not envy the rich. But we call them to account on violating the eighth commandment of stealing, of being dishonest in their dealings, even if it is at a very high level. I think it's appropriate for us to do that. We're not envying the rich. We're simply saying, friends, there's still the eighth commandment. And these powerful government officials that are constantly redistributing wealth and are constantly finding ways in which they can shift money from here to there and are finding ways in which they can devalue money by increasing the money supply, handing out free money everywhere, and then seeing to it that their friends are benefited by their government economic policies. Friends, this is what we're calling to account on this edition of the program. And I think things have changed in terms of the character of these wealthy people. The richest man in America was probably still Rockefeller. Rockefeller had his problems. And we're talking about Rockefeller from the 1890s up into the 1920s. But it turns out he was a faithful member of his Baptist church. He stayed faithful to his marriage. It was his innovation on oil refining that brought him into the driver's seat, and his monopoly was not subsidized by government funding. In fact, eventually, it was the government that was attempting to break up his monopoly. But it was not the government giving him some kind of an advancement that produced his tremendous success. The richest man in America in the 20s, 30s, and 40s was Henry Ford. Again, married to just one woman, Clara Jane Bryant, all the way up into 1950. He supported himself and his wife by farming and running a sawmill. They had one child, Edsel Ford. The richest man in America in the 1980s was Sam Walton. So again, these guys are not Elon Musk. My point is that we are seeing a breakdown of character in the present day, but we did not see that in the 1880s, did not see it in the 1920s with Henry Ford. We did not see it in the 1980s with Sam Walton. Sam Walton was the Walmart guy. Remember the Walmart guy, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Once again, yeah. He was a man of character. Walton married Helen Robson on Valentine's Day, February 14, 1943. They had four children, Samuel, John, James, and Alice. Walton supported various charitable causes. He and Helen were active in the First Presbyterian Church in Bentonville, Arkansas. Sam served as an elder and a Sunday school teacher, teaching high school age students. The family made substantial contributions to that congregation. Okay, so this is not Sam Walton. This is not Henry Ford. This is not Rockefeller. We're talking about the Elon Musks today. The richest men in America are divorcees, scoundrels, profligates. This breakdown of character, I think, is the very indication of the rottenness of the entire nation. The nation is rotten to the core. There's no soundness to it. Listen to Isaiah 1. From the sole of the foot, even to the head, there's no soundness in it. The wounds and bruises and putrefying sores, they've not been closed or bound up or soothed with ointment. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Strangers devour your land and your presence, and it's desolate as overthrown by strangers. You know what this really means? Let me just wrap it up this way, Steve. I think what this means is America is still all about appearances. It just appears that Elon Musk is worth $200 billion. It appears that his company is doing quite well, despite the fact that he's gaining his profit from these government subsidies, despite the fact that he's got stock that is overvalued by, what was it, 1,000-fold or 300-fold? I can't remember.
Yeah, something like that. 200, I think. 200-fold.
The biggest ripoff in the universe. Tesla stock is the biggest ripoff in the universe. He's got a capitalization of $1,400,000 per car that he's producing in any given year.
But
that's
at least
pretty
it,
sad.
But at least it looks good.
At least he looks good, right?
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't look all that good because he just broke up with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
He got divorced, what, 4 or 5 years ago, broke up with another girlfriend. Friends, America is about appearances. America just wants to appear wealthy, strong, and wonderful. But it's all about appearances. And again, I think this comes back to the churches as well. The church is much like Laodicea. And what does the church in Laodicea say in Revelation chapter 3? You say, I am rich, I have become wealthy, and have need of nothing. But this is what Jesus says. You don't know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. What we have is whitewashed sepulchers, complete with external moralisms. The only moral left is be kind and tolerant to incestuous child molesters, sodomites, or whatever. It's all arbitrary. It's this extremely cheap, laughably cheap, moralistic facade that so constitutes the American ethic today. It's like a nothing burger when it comes to ethics. Like there's nothing left. So what does this all mean for us, friends? I think the bottom line here is we need to be brutally honest. We need to humble ourselves before God and be brutally honest about our own spiritual impoverishment. All facades must go. Money can't save us in the day of wrath. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. But we are all like an unclean thing, Isaiah 64. All our righteousnesses are like filthy rags. We fade as a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind have taken us away. I think it's a point at which we come to is must be a recognition of our impoverishment, a recognition of our brokenness before God, that we are undone from the inside out. We have glorified these wonderful appearances. We act as if we are wealthy and rich and everything will be okay in the day of judgment. No, we're undone. Even our riches are a facade, let alone our righteousnesses. We are in need of God's salvation. We are in need of the cleansing blood of Jesus Christ, friends, and that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. First, to be honest and to recognize that we are sinners before a holy God and to break down and fall down before his feet and just cry out, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Let's not pretend to be wealthy. Let's not pretend to be righteous. Let's just acknowledge that we are in need of the grace of God. I think that's the fundamental issue. That's the fundamental issue. And when it comes to your very best investment, let me just say this. This is what I put into the book for our ninth grade audience. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. The very best investment is to follow Jesus. Jesus clarifies this in Matthew 19. He says, everyone that has forsaken houses, or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands, for my name's sake shall receive a hundredfold and shall inherit eternal life. This is the principle, friends. This is the principle. Let's give to the poor. Let's be concerned for the kingdom of God and his righteousness first. Let's lay up for ourselves a foundation against the time to come and lay hold on eternal life. That's what Paul says to the rich in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations broadcast. There's so much more to say, but more to get in my little book, How the World Runs, for ninth graders or for the rest of us who need to know a little bit more about, well, what is a value and what is the most essential value in life? I guess ultimately I'm trying to answer the ultimate questions in this book. But for the time being, friends, if you're interested in what's going on with the American economy, I'd encourage you to our little book, or our big book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. Specifically, the little chapter, The Rise and Fall of the Western Economy. I think that could be the most helpful, especially at this stage where we are on the very cusp of a massive economic breakdown. So get a copy of that, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, at generations.org. And this is Kevin Swanson and Steve Vaughn. And let me invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.